Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry. Snowy day here in the Northeast. March coming in like a lion.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
And we begin the takeaway with our agenda segment, looking forward this week not to the weather, which is expected to be bad both in Washington and New York, but a healthcare summit, which is the big event in Washington, D.C. President Obama made clear that healthcare reform was on the top of his priority list last week during his address to Congress. Today, besides the healthcare summit, he's set to officially announce Kansas Governor Kathleen Sebelius as his choice to head up Health and Human Services. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton makes her way to the Middle East. And in exchange, Prime Minister Brown heads to Washington this week. Kind of a bifurcated agenda, both in Washington and around the world. We begin with Anna Marie Cox from Air America, national correspondent and Daily Beast contributor. She's in Washington, D.C. Anna Marie Cox, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So healthcare is going to be on everyone's mind, trying to keep from falling down on the icy streets of Washington, D.C. today. but how important is it that the Obama agenda has finally moved to healthcare after so much anticipation and so much sort of negotiating through the weeds of the stimulus package and the budget?
Well, it's going to be another set of negotiations, and it looks like he's going to be treating this healthcare summit and also the rollout of the plan in the same way he kind of treated the stimulus, which is to go on the campaign trail. He's going to Ohio this week, and also he has this healthcare summit where we're probably going to be seeing a lot of unhappy people. I think they're going to bring out some members of the public, bring out voters who are unhappy with their healthcare, which shouldn't be too hard to find, really.
And basically, you see on two levels a preemption of what was the very powerful Republican argument during the Clinton years that, number one, this is going to cost too much, and number two, it's going to scare people. It sounds like the Obama administration is basically going to find people who are already scared and put them front and center, and he's led with the cost. He's basically said, this is the money we have, we're going to do it with this. Does that nullify the debate over cost, do you think, among Republicans?
Oh, I think Republicans are still going to talk about it. I mean, they're still unhappy about the stimulus package, obviously. And they just but in a weird way, I wonder, I don't have any particular insight on this, but I wonder if getting that stimulus package through will make it easier to get health care through, because people now feel like, okay, yeah, let's throw money at it. This is how we solved one problem or how we want to solve a problem, and maybe this will work too. I think the attitude of the American public towards the stimulus plan, which is that things are so bad that we just need to throw a lot of money at it, and we're not going to worry about what the particulars of the plan are. If that worked for Obama with the stimulus package, I mean, he may be trying that again with the healthcare package. And I also think it's interesting, he is just giving a broad outline to Congress. He really wants Congress to fill in the details on this. But you're right. I mean, I think he's very much sort of setting this up as a mandate from a lot of people that we recognize. When we hear him talk about this, we're going to be hearing about a lot of specific people, and we sort of see ourselves in it. I think that's his point.
Right. So see ourselves, and that's a great takeaway, that we actually have become inoculated to all these zeros in this era of $700 billion for this, $300 billion for that. This morning, apparently the Treasury is going to give an extra $30 billion to AIG, which will announce its own $62 billion loss. So we've got sort of
billion there.
Yeah, exactly right. finally, take a listen to this possibly familiar voice, Anna Marie Cox.
This notion that I want the president to fail, folks, this shows you a sign of the problem we've got. That's nothing more than common sense, and to not be able to say it. What is in this? What possibly is in this that any of us want to succeed?
Apparently failure is an option for radio host Rush Limbaugh. What was the context of that, and who was he speaking with? And I know you spent some time with GOP leaders and youngsters searching for a way forward in this Obama era in Washington.
Right. The Conservative Political Action Conference was at the Omni Shoreham in Washington, but really it was in the wilderness. it's an annual event that brings a lot of conservative students to Washington, but also it's sort of a rite of passage for anyone interested in the Republican nomination to headline there. That's not to say that I think Rush Limbaugh is interested in the Republican nomination, but he was a headliner at the event along with Ann Coulter, Huckabee, Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, a whole range of people, but really it's kind of to the right a little bit. Pawlenty was a moderate at this conference. And it was weird, though. People asked me if the attitude down there seemed depressed or there was a lack of energy. Really, this is like a part of the party that enjoys being exiled. They like being on the defensive. And also their message to themselves, at least, I don't know if this is going to carry into Republican moderate message, is that we have lost because we aren't conservative enough. They feel like this is an opportunity to take their party even further to the right.
So maybe
it's a little bit mind-bending. It's like being a little bit on another planet.
So, but maybe they're delivering the argument that Rahm Emanuel made over the weekend, that actually for the conservative movement, Rush Limbaugh is the conscience of it, and for Republicans can distance themselves from Rush Limbaugh only at their peril. We got to move on to the overseas agenda, but you know, congratulations on being the Twitter pioneer. Washington has become Twitter City, and you were there at the beginning, huh?
I was there at the beginning. I actually used Twitter to cover the Republican primary contest, and I never really saw it getting this big, but welcome David Gregory and the rest of the Washington elite to my world.
Well, we got the thousands of them from you at CPAC. Thank you, Anna Marie Cox, Air America national correspondent and Daily Beast contributor.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, what condition my condition was in.
Continuing the agenda now with Jonathan Marcus from our partners at the BBC. He joins us from Bush House in London. Jonathan, Gordon Brown is in Washington, traipsing around in the snow, and Hillary Clinton is in Sharm el-Sheikh, the resort town in Egypt, thinking about reconstructing Gaza. First of all, what is on Gordon Brown's agenda in meeting Barack Obama here in Washington as president for the first time?
Well, look, this is a big opportunity for Mr. Brown. It kind of blends together, intertwined, obviously crucial economic issues, the fiscal package, fiscal support, trying to get some concerted position ahead of this important G20 meeting on the economy in London next month. But also, very importantly, in domestic political terms for Mr. Brown, he's pretty much in the doldrums here at the moment, and he's looking towards this foreign trip to give himself something of a domestic boost as well.
You know, so many world leaders are sort of coming into the Obama sphere and expecting to get some sort of magical rub off. I mean, we saw it in Canada last week, and I can't imagine that Gordon Brown is going to be the only world leader who wants to get something of the Obama luster by coming to Washington or meeting him at some international meeting of one kind or another.
Well, of course, that's true. Mr. Obama is, if you like, veritably the lamp that the genie rubs, isn't he, at the moment? One imagines that will wear off over time. But look, this G20 meeting is obviously very important. Mr. Brown, the British Prime Minister, casts himself here as rather the not just the economic saviour of Britain, but the man who has a plan that everybody else can pitch into. So obviously getting Mr. Obama on board, President Obama, is crucial. But also it's vital, I think, for Mr. Brown, because he's not a leader who has perhaps the name recognition or the charisma of his predecessor, Tony Blair, in the United States. And he wants to try and establish that close relationship with Washington, not just because of the economic issues, but obviously there are a number of other important issues on the agenda, not least, of course, Afghanistan.
Well, let's move to the Middle East for a moment. Hillary Clinton, Secretary of State, is in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, at a conference on donors to help rebuild Gaza. What does she need to do as Secretary of State in this first Middle East foray besides show up and hand people a check or a pledge for $900 million to rebuild Gaza to project her credibility and power as Secretary of State, do you think, Jonathan?
Well, look, of course, she's not going to be able to hand out money. It's going to be up to Congress ultimately to vote that money. And I imagine, as probably many people do, that Congress will back her, but with rather less funds than perhaps the administration is looking for. I think at a crucial time in the Middle East, where the Palestinians are deeply divided, Israel remains without a new government, still the coalition negotiations in the wake of the elections are taking place, I think what she wants to do is set out a clear U.S. position, a clear backing for the two-state solution. I think that's less so in the current meetings, which are obviously about reconstruction in Gaza. But when she goes on to Israel at an interesting time without a coalition there formed, she in a sense has to tread carefully. She doesn't want to intrude into Israeli domestic politics, but she'll be meeting leaders from all sides. And I think her message will be clear that this is the direction that America wants to go in. It wants to keep momentum up behind the two-state plan. And there isn't much momentum, frankly, at the moment. And I think it will be, in a sense, a coded warning to those Israeli leaders like Mr. Netanyahu, the man most likely to emerge as prime minister, who's been pretty reticent about nailing his colours to the two-state mast,
right,
that there's going to be pressures and tensions with Washington if Israel goes off on a different course.
Well, Jonathan, that's a great takeaway. I mean, in a sense, this is Hillary Clinton's opportunity to project maximum credibility at a time of real transition in Israel and to project a helping hand to the people of Gaza. Jonathan Marcus, our partner at the BBC, joined us from Bush House in London. He's a diplomatic correspondent for the BBC Network.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.